morning, we'd like to thank everybody for coming. This week's topic, I believe, is connected with the parsha where you have a case of Avraham Avinu going off to help his mishpacha, Lot, and really, if any of those two men got lost in battle, unfortunately, you would have a situation of an anguna. Avraham Avinu's wife, Sarah, would be such a thing, even though Og wanted to marry her, but it's only if there's clear evidence. And Lot, who knows what would have happened to him. But really, the impetus for this morning's share, which is entitled An Aguna, a Rav, and the Mossad, the Israeli Mossad, is based on a fascinating story that the Rishon LeZion, the chief Sephardic rabbi in Israel, Yitzhak Yosef, the son of the famed Bavaji Yosef, recently told over in one of his famous, they have Motzei Shabbos Shirim in the Bukhari Mishul in Yerushalayim. And the story, he said, is quite fascinating. Anyone knows the history of Bavaji Yosef? He himself was tremendously involved in finding heters for agunas. Women whose husbands did not give them gets or went missing, really the two different categories. Rabbi Avadia spent a lot of time finding heterim for these women. And following the footsteps of his father, Rabbi Yitzhak Yosef, when he assumed the position of chief rav, one of the things that he did was he went through the Israeli rabbinate, kept extensive files and notes on all cases of agunas. And he decided to go through those old cases that were gathering dust. This case itself went back, it seems, even before the previous chief rabbi. And he went through the files to see if there are any cases, perhaps he could find a heter, perhaps he could free this woman from, unfortunately, the chains of being an aguna. And he came across a case which struck him. And he decided to call the woman, the aguna, down to his office. And they had a meeting. This woman has been an aguna for quite some time, even though she's relatively young. She was in her 30s. I believe younger 30s, and seemingly probably not too long after she got married, one day her husband just went missing. He left and never came back. Right? Not a laughing matter. It is a sad circumstance. Just never came back. And Rabbi Yitzhak Yosef started asking this woman multiple questions. One of the questions that he asked was he inquired about the husband's profession. This woman was a Sephardic woman, and her husband was of Bukharian descent. And she told him that her husband was a money courier. Now, if anyone knows anything about being a money courier, obviously not a simple business, you know. It could be kosher, it could be unkosher. You know, traveling even between countries with large sums of money. Not an easy job. But that's what this man did. And one day he went on a mission, and he never came back. So Rabbi Yitzhak Yosef, after meeting with the woman, says, I'm going to try to look into it. The next phone call that he made was the connection that Rabbi Yitzhak Yosef had in the top echelons of the Israeli Mossad. And he calls down this chief officer, no names were given in the story, and he told him about the situation, and he says, can you find me information on this guy? The officer, chief officer in the Mossad, had a lot of respect for Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, the Rishon Lezion. He says, Rabbi, I'll look into it. I'll get back to you. Pretty amazing thing, you know, that, you think about the state of Israel. You know, no one in the world, obviously Naguna Shaila is something so heavy, so big, to have the arm of Israeli's intelligence agency be involved in a case is amazing. A little while later, this person in the Mossad comes back to Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, I'd like to meet. But it has to be a top secret meeting. He met him at his house, but he insisted everyone else has to leave the room. All the electronic devices have to be shut or unplugged. And he sat with Yitzchak Yosef and he told him his findings. Israeli intelligence was able to determine that this man was killed by the Russian mafia. He said with quite a degree of certainty this man was killed by the Russian mafia. And Yitzchak Yosef says, that's amazing work. You know, to let a woman get remarried, I need more. He says, I want to go and meet with them. The Mossad turned to Yitzchak Yosef, Rabbi, if you go, you ain't coming back. You can't go.
He said, yeah.
You're not coming back. Can't go. So Yitzchak says, okay, fine. Can you send someone that will act as my shliach? And the story didn't specify, but I assume when Yitzchak Yosef asked for this person to act as a shliach, he gave him clear directions of what to do. This agent went back, went to Russia, met with one of the heads of the Russian mafia in a Russian forest. The mafioso arrived on a motorcycle in sunglasses. The Israeli Mossad agent never saw his face. There was a brief meeting. At the meeting, this Russian mafia associate gave over this husband's cell phone, car keys, and gave directions where in Belgium his body is buried. That's the information that was said over in this story. Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, upon getting this news, felt that it was enough to allow this woman to get remarried. And the next thing he does is he called the woman, telling her that you're now free to get remarried. That's a story, supposedly, as said over by Yitzchak Yosef a few weeks ago in his Motzei Shabbos share. It was reported on Yeshiva World News, this story, just last week. And after reading it, of course I said, wow, that sounds like a great topic for halacha share. I search far and wide. I need the Israeli Mossad for this share too. What I'd like to do today, unfortunately, to my knowledge, there is no tshuva that Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef yet wrote up about this case. There's nothing, to my knowledge, a halachic discourse on such a case. But I would like to retrace the steps. And from a halachic standpoint, I'm not saying I'm ready to paskin such a shiloh that's absurd. Aguna shilohs are the most complicated shilohs around. But at least to put forth some of the basic issues which I believe Yitzchak Yosef was grappling with in talking about such a case. Now really, this case that I just said over had, as we'll analyze, some elements which potentially are proofs that the husband is dead. I could have used another case, unfortunately, in the news, which also talks about seemingly a dead husband. right? Anyone who's up on the political news know this firestorm that come out of Saudi Arabia. How this Saudi journalist seemingly has been killed in the Saudi embassy in Turkey. Except, as of now, there's no clear evidence of him being killed. Now, there's different aspects, maybe some recording, this, that, but unfortunately you have cases like this, of where a person is gone, people don't know his whereabouts, he walked in, there's no clear footage, he walked out, and he's nowhere to be found. Aguna cases are, you know, they cross the spectrum of so many different scenarios, and you know, obviously very scary business. So I'd like to first go through a basic background of Hilchos Aguna, and then go into the particulars of this case involving an Aguna, the Rav, and the Mossad. Now, the basic background, this I didn't put on your sheets, at least most of this. But the first step, when you talk about an Aguna, a woman who's literally chained, a woman who can't get remarried, we deal with the fact that a woman can only get out of marriage two ways, right? If a husband divorces her, or if the husband dies. If you don't know for sure that the husband died, then she cannot get remarried. And a woman being, while she's married, until we know she's not married, is considered an erva, an illicit relationship of an Eishes Ish. So that's one of the most chomer averus in the Torah. In fact, we just talked about last week, three cardinal sins. Gilui Arayos, of course, applies to an Eishes Ish. If someone will live with a woman who does not have a clear heter to get remarried, that's a cardinal sin. It's a big deal. And in that sense, when you're dealing with potential, you know, if Chas HaShalom, she gets remarried without a good heter, the children from that marriage are mamzerim, clearly, and that is an absolute stain on yichus for that family any step forward. Quite complicated, dangerous things. If you look in the back of your sheets, before we even begin, just to show you the gravity of such a situation, I'm going to go through this tshuva a little bit later, but I have two tshuvas here from Moshe Feinstein. Moshe talks about, in that first tshuva, an introduction, the name of this woman who comes in front of him. This was back when he was a Rav in Russia. And Ramosha says, reading from the second to the last line of that first paragraph, "Vitiru mitam tam shavar, I martyred her based on the reasoning I'll put forth later. Be'ezus Hashem Yisbarach." But look at this line. "Vuhu yazreini, God should help me. Shol echshol chas v'shom b'dvar halacha la'olam. I shouldn't make a mistake in the dvar halacha." Here, I would translate the word la'olam forever. Meaning, if you make a mistake, if you're a Rav, you make a mistake with an Aguna, then that's a mistake that lives on, unfortunately. Woman lives with another man, and that's all on the shoulders of the Rav. So a heter to an Eishes Ish is the most grave, big situations. Unfortunately, in the world, you know, you sometimes see situations where Rabbanah might be quick to use, you know, sketchy heterim. It's a very, very, very big responsibility. An Eishes Ish is one of the most chomer averos. And you see how Rav Moshe, you know, writes a tefillah in the beginning of his tshuva, that Chas HaShalom, he shouldn't make a mistake in such a thing, which will leave him with responsibility, sin, forever. On the other hand, Rabbanim through the ages have done everything they can to find a valid halachic basis to matter an aguna. I was looking in the earlier svarim, the Levush, He uses a very strong language, ma'od ma'od ekilu rabbanim, to find a terim for Agunas. With much, much effort did Rabbanim invest to see if they could find somehow a heter for a woman to get remarried. And that's a balance, a very, very tricky balance. On the one hand, you realize this is one of the biggest averas in the Torah. On the other hand, you have to feel the pain, the plight of an aguna. And the more you feel the pain, the plight of this woman, the more potentially a person's motivated to find their heter. Remember my Rebbe, Reb Henoch Leibowitz, would say over a story about Reb Chaim Ozer Gordinsky, who's the of Bezin in Vilna. And Reb Chaim Ozer was matur many agunas. And Reb Shiva would explain that Reb Chaim Ozer, besides his great halachic knowledge, but his sensitivity, his feelings towards the plight of these women, helped him work harder to halachically find a heter. So it's a very delicate balance. You want to do everything al pi halacha, at the same time, you want to utilize all of your strength, all of your compassion to find a heter. Now, the most basic halacha, also not on your sheets, there's so much to do in this topic. Really, any shayla involves so much, and these are of the most, probably the most challenging area in halacha, is hilchos aguna. There are very, very few rabbanim who have the shoulders that are ready to pass on such things. Well, let me just read to you the first basic halacha. Again, this is not in your sheets. Isha shahalach bailam medina sayam. It's the beginning of Shulchan Aruch Siman Yud Zayin Sif Gimel. A woman whose husband goes to a foreign country, the idol of Shemes. He's dealing with a case where they actually testified that he died. Afil eid echad, even if it's only one aid. Normally in the Torah we know you have to have two aid. But when it comes to aguna, the Torah itself allowed for one aid to be sufficient. Or so that would work. The halacha says further, heid eved o shivcha, o isha o karov. What happens if you have people that normally are disqualified for aidas? An eved, a shivcha, an isha, a relative. Nevertheless, the halacha is mutaretz. Even in such circumstances, any type of aidas, doesn't matter if there's a psul karov, will accept that. Obviously, there's a lot of lumdis behind how that works, how that's possible. Va'afil ein pied, ha'ishim pi'isho, evin shifcho, karov, k'shem le'yazu. Normally, we don't accept eidos from eidos. It has to be first-hand eidos, not secondary eidos. Any eidos in the Torah has to be the person who observed it. It can't be, I'm sending my wife, I'm sending somebody else. I heard it from somebody else. It has to be the person who saw it. Yet over here, we allow for such eidos to work. And we'll talk about that more soon. Continuing on, it says, psulei eidos, psulim d'rabbanim are k'sherim, avol psulei eidos d'araisa. Someone who's possible for eidos d'araisa, those are psulim. We're not there many things, but there's a red line. If you're someone who's possible eidos, if you're someone who's not trustworthy, right? Probably a Jewish mafiosa guy would fit into that category, just for the record. Your posel eidos does not work. A Gentile, right? Posel medaraisa does not work. Can't have testimony from a Gentile. However, the mesichim lefitumam, if they say it in passing, then k'sherim, they're kosher. Now, this last halacha is where we're going to begin. Because really, if you think about the case that we talked about, there weren't exact details, right? The Russian mafia who rubbed off this guy. Were they Jewish? Not Jewish? If they're Jewish, they'll be possible in the Raisa, seemingly, too. But even if it was a Gentile, there is a heter of Mesiach Lefitumo. if they said something in passing. So perhaps when the Israeli Mossad agent hears from this person that this person is dead, perhaps we could accept that as testimony. If that's under the guise of Mesiach Lefitumo. Now I'd like to go on and explain. I think that's one big area to explain is the concept of Mesiach Lefitumo. That's one big aspect I'm going to talk about today. And then a second aspect, which we're going to get to, is the aspect of simanim, of potential identifying objects. Is that a proof that the husband is dead? Because we also had that in the case. The cell phone, the car. Now, it doesn't say, he didn't say over the story, it seems there were some directions for where the body was buried in Belgium. It doesn't say that the Israeli government went and unearthed the body and checked it. It doesn't say they did that. It could be, you know, not so simple to get to. It could be, you know, what do they say? Where's Jimmy Hoffa? The old Giant Stadium? Yeah. So, I don't know. It doesn't say anywhere they were able to get to the body. You know, that would be, you know, the body obviously is the best proof in these type of situations.
Jimmy Hoffa. He was buried in a cemetery?
No.
They just
this person?
They just buried him along the street. I mean, cemeteries have records. He was buried.
Yeah, the Russian mafia wasn't looking to bury him nicely in the cemetery in Belgium.
They buried him in the East River.
Yeah.
Or they ripped his body apart.
Yeah, so hold on. No gruesome details. We're eating breakfast. Now. Now. So, on your sheets, we'll talk about Mesiach Lefitumo first. This concept that as long as it's not said, we'll see soon, the exact definition. But as long as not said as Eidos, it's said in passing that something that's acceptable even for someone who's possible for Eidos, like a Gentile. So the source is the Gemara in Yevamos, the end of Yevamos. The Gemara talks about Masnis Diktani Vavachavim Imhay Miskavini Yeduso Eidos. The Gemara talks about that a guy would be believed as long as he's not intent on giving Eidos. So the Gemara says, Heichi Mishkachasla. Where do we have a case where he's not intent on giving edus? So the Gemara says, "B'meisiach lefitumo," when he just talks about it in passing, right? Meisiach is the lashon, he's speaking lefitumo just in passing. Ki ahu davi ka amar va'azol man ikur bechiyoy shachiv chiyoy. A guy says, "Oh, what's going to be with Joe? What's going to be with Joe?" Oh, Joey passed away. If a guy makes a statement, whoa, Joe passed away, Joe died. So the Gemara says, Vinciver of Yosef of the Sayo. If Yosef heard that, he married off his wife. He allowed the woman to get remarried. And the Shulchan Aruch goes further. You look in the Shulchan Aruch, second sheet, part on the sheet. Now, these halachas are so complicated, and I would say, unfortunately, so less traveled. Even in the Shulchan Aruch itself, there are blatant mistakes, printing mistakes. And this is one of the most unused halachim, Evan Hauser, especially, is Simon, you know, in halacha, because it's quite, quite complicated. So in reading through this, like the classic old Shulchan Aruch, I found it has mistakes there, pretty important mistakes. So I'll read it with you. I have the new edition, which has the corrections. Kvar Marnu, we already said before, referring to the halacha I began with, Shakusi she'siach lefitumo, that a Gentile who's speaking in passing, Masin al piv, you get remarried. Ketzad, what's the case? Right, you always have to dodge. In the Shulchan Aruch, they have lots of footnotes, lots of explanations which they put with all different letters. So you have to know when something's a letter and when something is the words here. So ketzad, what's the case? Woe to Joe who passed away. That's exactly the case of our Gemara. Oh, kama hayinoye. Oh, he was such a beautiful guy. Kama hay tova usini. How much good the guy did with me. Oh, she mesiach va'omer. Or the guy is talking and saying, Kishayishi Balbaderech, when I was passing the road, the Nafal Ploni Shaymadarech Imano, the mace, we're on this hike, and this guy just fell and died. Maybe it was the Blue Lagoon from the other week. V'timonu l'dover zeh. And, I didn't say it in here. V'timonu l'dover zeh. And he's expressing woe, wonder about it. Ketza meis ploni. How could he die so suddenly? Please tell me, how could he die so suddenly? Kiyotu dvarim elu. Or similar things. Shehemarim, here should add in the word, she'ein kavanasa l'hayid. By your speech, it shows she'ein kavanasa l'hayid. It's not his intention to testify. Hareza neman. You see, the definition of Mesech Lihitumo is a person making a statement without any intention to testify. I'm just talking. And Bezdin, or perhaps their shliach, or somebody else, overhears this, that's admissible in court. If the person speaking had no intent to testify, then that's good. Obviously, normal edos, of course a person has an intent to testify. That's the whole thing.
And that's the case where the guy would have not even been allowed to testify?
Correct. We're dealing with a Gentile who was 100% apostle for edos. But if he makes the comment, agavurcha, in passing, then that's what we call meseach lefitumo, and that's something we accept. So right there, you see the first very important qualification is you have to have absolutely no kavana to testify. And the reasoning behind this is we are afraid that if the guy did intend to testify, and he's someone who's possible, maybe he's lying. But over here, this is what you call a natural, organic situation. He just came up. He just said it. There's no indication that he had any intent to testify. So then we accept it. Because not everybody lies all the time. They lie with intent. I'm going to the situation, so I'm going to be asked something, I'll lie. But we're just talking, there's a certain assumption, even amongst Gentiles, or someone who's not believable, that you're just talking, you know what? Seemingly you're telling the truth. And that's why we would accept the Gentile's word if he wasn't intent on testifying. That's one factor.
Based on one aid?
Yes, so even one aid. One Gentile says in passing, this guy died. If that, what we call testimony or knowledge, was given in the right way, I'm going to show you soon more, there are other qualifications. Not so simple to get Eidos Meseach Levituma. I'll show you soon why in the case I talked about with the Mossad agent, that Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef originally wanted to go himself. He didn't want to trust an Israeli Mossad agent to be the one to talk to the Russian mafia, because I'm sure he was afraid that it would not be done correctly and that would be a problem. So that's why he himself was ready to go to Russia to see if he could find the mafia.
So A.P.P. is okay?
Yes. Yes. But as long as the first source, the primary source of testimony was given over in the proper way, where the person had no intent to testify, then that's good.
How do you know that the person, he realized he can't give testimony, so he just purposefully makes it seem that he's just saying.
So you're right. If a guy figured out our system, and that's what we're afraid of, it will not be acceptable. It has to be a case where we have zero suspicion that he's lying, zero suspicion, you know, that he's listening to my share somewhere online, and figuring out the halachos of Meseach Lefitumo, why I didn't categorize this share as Meseach Lefitumo. I categorize this share, you know, huh? Yeah, seemingly.
Why would the Goyish Russian mafia say, yeah, we killed him, he's going to go seek him out?
So that's excellent segue. I would like to get to this next halacha. Hold on. If you look at the next paragraph in the Mechaber, you see the marmakomas that I gave today are extensively the Shulchan Aruch, because there's so much out there just from the basics of Shulchan Aruch before you get to all the poskim and everyone else wrote after. Just go through the Shulchan Aruch. There's so many sources. Look what the Shulchan Aruch writes in the second line of that second paragraph. The second part of Beis. V'chinim shama me'ar kol shokusim. If you hear by a Gentile court, sha'amu hagnu ploni, that they say, we killed him. So what do you say? Yeah, we killed the journalist. Einan them on him. They're not believed. Shame achzikim de'atzman because of. Sometimes these countries, we killed bin Laden. Everyone's going to fight over who killed him. V'chein kol kidyotzim d'var me'ela. There's a general idea that we don't accept a Gentile court for these things. Who said they're trustworthy? A Gentile court is not the same scenario that we just talked about before. There's no problem with an individual Gentile, an individual non-Jew, says in passing a statement about the death of a person. Fine. But to issue an official statement, to make it like an official document of court or an official announcement, that we don't take, that we don't believe. Pretty amazing. Yes?
So it kind of sounds like if you can see that there may be an ulterior motive, then it wouldn't be believable, whereas something in passing where the person couldn't be held to it would...
Right. If it's something in passing which we don't think there's any intent of giving testimony here by a Gentile, that's okay. But to issue an official statement or a testimony just because, look, it says, you know, the governor of Bolivia says this person is dead. That's not worth the paper it's written on in halacha. Now, I'll tell you an amazing story I came across in my research. Years ago in Russia, a Jewish man, fortunately, was drafted into the army. Had a wife, kids at home. And unfortunately, a while later, the woman receives a letter from the commanding officer of her husband's army, stating that her husband died at war. Obviously, a very painful letter to receive. The woman went and took this letter to her local Beis Din. And they told her, look, this is proof your husband is dead. And you get remarried. She post this, met a man, and they decided they're going to get married. She had a heter from her local Beis Din to get remarried. She went, found someone to get married to, and they're going to get married. Before they're going to get married, this person, this man, decided he wanted to get a bracha from the Tzemach Tzedek, earlier Lubavitch Rebbeim. And he went to the Tzemach Tzedek, and the Tzemach Tzedek, don't ask me how he knew this, you can figure it out, but the Tzemach Tzedek said, I'm not giving you a bracha. I'm absolutely not giving you a bracha. But his cryptic words were, if you go to Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin, a big tzaddik, brisk, you go to Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin, and he gives you a heter, fine, go to Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin. He went to Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin. Yeshua Leib Diskin heard the case, also wasn't ready to give a heter. Yeshua Leib Diskin, though, said, I have an idea. I'm going to send a shliach to the town where this person was stationed during the Yom Ha'Nahrin. This person was stationed in some place in Russia. I'm going to send a shliach to look for that dead husband during the Yom Ha'Nahrin. In fact, he sent a shliach, and on Yom Kippur, that dead husband showed up to Shul. Obviously, they saved this woman from living in sin, getting remarried. Now, I don't really get the original heter. Seemingly, this is the case of our kos, of where there was an official statement from the Gentile. I'm not sure what the basis really for that original heter was, based on Shulchan Aruch. But definitely, Tzemach Tzedek and Rishu Ablev were onto this, and they actually found that, I don't know what was going on over there, but the husband was well and alive, and he showed up to Shul in Yom Kippur, perhaps to do tshuva for what he was doing.
He arranged for his death.
So these halachas are quite amazing. You know, our Torah, our Chazal, give exact directions for a situation which we could feel comfortable getting remarried. But again, short of that, not so simple. So again, the first two aspects we see is Mesiach Vitumo. Gentile's testimony only works if there's no intent to testify. And that excludes any official statement given forth, any document that they would like to give, a ruling from a court, that doesn't work. I'll show you further halachas. If you look at what I have, Os Gimel, which is the Shulchan Aruch and Tezvav. A halacha states, Kusi she'isiach lefitumo tchila. If the Gentile first started talking himself, without being prompted, even though he's questioned afterwards on his statement, he made a statement in passing, but he was followed up with questions on that, until he explains the whole circumstance, whole story, we do allow to follow up with questions on the Gentile statement. But as long as the initial statement was made without being prompted, that's okay. However, avol shol oso tchila, but if we ask him first, ayach avreinu, where's our friend? V'amol lahem shemes, and he says that he died. Ein ze mikri meseich l'fitumo. That's not called meseich l'fitumo. So this is very important. If Israel would have sent a person in and would have first, this Israeli agent, would have first asked the Russian mafia about the case, and that brought the Russian mafia to answer his question, that would not be valid Meseich Levituma.
So how would the guy talk?
You need the guy to talk by himself. Now, a good Israeli agent, I'm sure, could figure out ways to draw the conversation somewhat, where if there's any room for the guy to talk about the situation, he'll talk about it without directly being asked. But it's a very delicate thing. It has to be handled well. Yes?
Is this a situation where you're assuming the Russian mafia killed the guy?
Mm-hmm.
So if a guy would admit something that would be to his,
detriment.
His benefit, to his detriment, why would that not be believed?
Excellent point. Right, he is hurting himself, you say, seemingly with this, but we don't know, because these things, especially, this is a good point you're bringing out, Mr. Brass. Mr. Brass is asking that, look, if a person is testifying that he killed him, seemingly, don't we look at that as detrimental? So the fact he's saying something detrimental about himself must be he's telling the truth. But it's not necessarily true. Because there are many situations, especially if you know anything in halacha, you're hurting, if you're telling a lie about this, you're hurting this person. You're hurting the wife, you're hurting the husband, and the guy might have an agenda, I want to get back to this person. The ultimate way to hurt a person is to mess around with these halachas. There could be other things, there could be financial gain, right? The woman's looking for a heter, someone's looking to pay off a heter. So you can't look at a situation one-dimensionally with what he says.
This is the mafia.
Right.
They work on fear-mongering. They're not afraid to say they ever know to kill somebody. They want people. Yeah, yeah.
Right. That's true, too.
Point of fear. Yeah, it's true.
Right.
And remember, right. The next guy who's ever going to do something.
Yes, it's very true that these organizations also work on a reputation. It's sort of like the Israelis, and anytime there's a hit on some, you know, terrorist. We can't, the Israeli never makes a comment about it, right? Whether they killed him or not, they always look good.
In
this case, the Mossad agent is the Russian mafia saying, as good as you guys are, you're still not going to touch us.
Yeah.
We're going to do our thing.
Yeah. Now, one interesting aspect, though, that which we say, and this fits more also the line that we're talking about, questioning that you're giving me, that we're only talking about a Jew questioning the Gentile. But if a Gentile was the one to ask him questions, that's okay. Because again, that's a different type of prompting. He doesn't think that what he's saying is going to be used in Jewish courts if you use a Gentile there. So that would be, in the case that I talked about, where Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef is sending through the Mossad an Israeli agent to meet with the Russian mafia. So I wonder the nature, did they send a Jewish Mossad agent? Or everyone knows Mossad has agents who are not Jewish. They have Druze, they have Arabic, Muslim, they have all types of agents. So I wonder, that detail was not revealed in the case, but I wonder what agent did he have? Did he send a Jewish agent or a non-Jew? But definitely this aspect of the questioning versus being unprompted is a very important detail that has to be done properly. And I'll show you another halacha. In the middle of that piece in the Ramah, he says, let's say you have a suffix. I'm not sure how this was carried out. If Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, after the Israeli Mossad chief came back to him, if he had any doubts if this was handled properly or not, you know what the halacha is? Suffik de'oraisa l'chumra. You can't get a heter if it's only a suffik. It has to be crystal clear that this process was handled well to take this testimony in Mesiach Levituma. So, like I said, that's my assumption why he himself was ready to travel to Russia to meet with the Russian mafia. Because Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef knew these are very complicated halachas. And who could I trust? I'm going to do it myself. It's not as if he could send his Talmud Muvok as the next, you know, Israeli agent. I don't think the Mossad is ready to take, you know, some yeshiva bacher to go out and meet with the Russian mafia in the forest.
Was there an attempt to find the body in that particular...
So I don't think so. That's what I was saying before. The body here seemed to play no real role in the case.
You said earlier that it has to be first-hand knowledge.
Yes.
To know the person died. In this case, with the Mossad, how do you know that?
Right. So I'm about to show you the next halacha. Perfect point. I said normal Hilchos Eidos is first-hand testimony. However, by Mishumi Guna Ikilo Barabanan, they allow even second-hand testimony, aid mipi aid, and really, it's not just second-hand. It's as long as the chain is, as long as you could trace it back to the original spot on the telephone. It could be third-hand, fourth-hand, fifth-hand, as long as it's the direct chain where I could question and go back and back and back and verify up to the person who got it, that would work. And the halacha states in Tes Zion, which I have there in the bottom of the sheets, that it would work. You could double dip heterim there. You could use aid mipi aid even with multiple Gentiles. So you're using the heter of Mesiach Lefitumo together with the heter of aid mipi aid. Both of those factors together work. This is part of this concept of Nishum Guna Kilo Barabanan. The rabbis will use all different halachic tools to permit a woman to get remarried, even though that normally wouldn't do such things. Now, I'd like to share with you one more aspect on this concept of Mesiach Lefitumo, kulos that we use here. Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked in that first Shaila I spoke about in the back. He was asked about a case, a husband went missing, and they got written statement from a Gentile, not given as testimony, but a written statement from a Gentile. Now it's interesting. The halacha normally states, mipihem v'lo mipi kisva, is that all testimony has to be verbal, not written down. Now, there's different reasonings behind that. Pashas, Tzegzeres, HaKosov, Torah deliberately excludes it, that It has to be written down. It has to be verbal testimony, not written down. Now, there are certain exceptions. But, so in normal cases, you wouldn't accept written testimony. The case that Moshe dealt with was a Gentile saying something in passing, but he didn't say it in passing. It was a text. I'm putting it in modern day terms. It was something that was written down. Within a letter that he wrote to his family, he was bemoaning, whoa, Joe passed away. Is that admissible in the court? And the original person involved said, no, Torah asers, mipivalon, pikisvam. If you had verbal, if that was said verbally by a Gentile, that would be okay. But written down doesn't work. And Moshe Feinstein argues, no, such a thing would be admissible. And he gives very interesting reasoning. The psul that we have of mipivalon, pikisvam, perhaps this is also the understanding behind aid mipied. Those are dinim and hilchos eidos. When you're giving what the Torah defines as testimony, so then it has to be with these specific ways to do it. But really what we're doing with over here, when a Gentile talks about someone dying, that's not testimony. It's a different category. That's what we call proof. It's a whole chacha, right? I labeled the share Yishumaguna, v'whole chacha shemeis baila. This is not eidos. Eidos would mean a Jew, even one Jew, even a woman. That, for sure, okay. Let's be careful what I say. But for sure, two eidim, that would be eidos. I would think one eid is also probably eidos. But these cases, Rav Moshe Feinstein saying, it's a proof, it's not eidos. So it's working in a different stratosphere. So that's why we accept these other kulas, ein mipi eid, even mipi kisvam, because it's a different type. And all this does add to proof that the person's dead. So this is all one big aspect. I quickly want to get to the other aspect about siman. If you look at the bottom right corner of the first sheet, first slide, what happens if we do find, first it talks about matzu, harug, you find the dead body, or mace, in padachto, v'chotmo, if you have with his forehead, with his nose, or parts of panav, and his facial features, before I should say that's the cheeks, kayam, they're still there, v'kiru behem, shuploni, mi'idin alav. Right? Forensics need a certain amount of his face, not necessarily his eyes, his mouth, but certain aspects, forehead, cheeks, that works to testify on. Then nitul echem elu, if you're missing those, Shulchan Aruch throws in a line. Aval pi sheyesh lem simanim uvhakim biyoser bekelav, even though you have great simanim on his clothing or the objects on him, enum klum, that doesn't mean anything. The chashinan l'she'ela, we're worried he might have lent it out. You see, he's wearing a certain shirt. That's nice, but that's not a good enough proof. Maybe he lent it out. Maybe it's on hers. He has a certain object. Very nice. Maybe it's on his. Objects or clothing, the Shulchan Aruch says, in identifying a dead body, that doesn't work. Now, this, the case we just talked about, right? The phone, the car keys. No? Maybe it's somebody else. Maybe he lent out his phone. Maybe he lent out his car keys. Now, I'm going to shave off the questions as we're moving. Hold on. Now, there are some things that we say, look, it's not, people never lend these things out, right? My phone, I'm never going to lend out, people say, especially the guy to keep it, to walk with it. Okay, I don't know, debatable. That sounds about my car.
You're finding the phone on a person, but you just found the phone.
Right. Let's say, unfortunately, there's no recognizable details
but
in a person's face.
Person.
It was on the dead body. Is you have a phone in the pocket of the husband, you have the car keys.
That's not what happened here.
Which case?
In this case with Yosef, we don't have a body.
Correct. Correct. We just have a phone and car keys. Right.
So
it's even worse.
Phone or keys is nothing.
But I want to show you this very interesting tshuva from Moshe Feinstein. Very sad, yes. Moshe Feinstein, if you look in the back of your sheets, look at this case. Fascinating case to read. Moshe writes, "B'mosav tlos bezdin kachad avina." We have a bezdin convened over here on Thursday, sixth day of Iyar, Tufshin Yud Tes, exactly 60 years ago. Paul Afanov, Mendel Gettinger, and he says about Reb Yitzchak Diller, who was called in English Alfred, that was known to Mr. Gottlieb, that was with him on an airplane, that unfortunately fell into the East River on Wednesday, the 26th day of Shvat. And Mr. Gottlieb was one of the people who was saved. And yesterday, Wednesday, the police found the body, and the police say that this is Mr. Yitzchak Diller, that when the tragedy happened, they asked the wife, are there any identifiable aspects of your husband? And he said, yeah, he had a ring with the initials AD on it. And they found the body with that ring, AD on it. Not just that, but on his middle finger of his left hand. That's where he normally wore it. They also found, interesting, on his shirt, that from the cleaners, it had a mark D12, and also Dill, for maybe the name Dillman, on it. And also, his pants also had this mark from the cleaners. Then they went to the dental records. Gives the name of the dentist. He lived, the dental office was 730 Fifth Avenue in New York. Good real estate. And they brought the records, and they had cavities. And they found the teeth. It was exactly marking the same teeth this person had. They also had a belt that his wife remembers that he wore. His height and weight matched the descriptions. They furthermore found business cards that he had out, Alfred Diller. And Ramosha ends off writing, "Valpi smach edusim shel kohanal, hetirunu osa linase l'chol adam kedin amana," and we're signing on this date. Obviously, a sad case, but Ramosha details every ounce of proof that he had in this case, from the ring to the cleaner's mark on the shirts, on the pants, height, weight, dental records. And with all that, he mattered, get remarried. Now, there was no identifiable aspect in the body. You didn't recognize the face, unfortunately. All these things seemingly are simanim in clothing. The one thing I had a doubt about was, what about the dental records? Is that considered part of the body, not part of the body?
Those don't lie.
Right?
They use those all the time.
Right, but those
are like fingerprints.
Right, those are... So I'm not sure. Do you consider that already? Is a dental implant, a cavity filling, is that really like part of the body? It's like a fingerprint? Or no, it's still viewed. People have fillings all the time. It's external.
Yeah, they also
it's like the clothing you wear.
Skeleton is left teeth. It's almost impossible for all the different
These x-rays are individualized.
This was 60 years ago. I'm not sure how great the x-rays were. Okay? No dentist in the... Right?
If a filling is a temporary filling, that may not be considered part of the body. If it's a permanent filling, a woman that goes to mikveh, that's not considered a
chatzitza. Correct.
It's considered a part of her body.
So in your medical... opinion. 60 years ago, would you say that they had those dental records were proof just like seeing a face?
Yes.
You would think so.
60 years ago, they pulled teeth much more frequently than leave a temporary.
Okay, interesting. So I'm not clear. You would say that the dental records alone might be clear proof that this is the dead body. Ramosha. In the tshuva, my feeling, and I'm not sure, he doesn't spell that out, he put down everything he had there. And with all this combined, he did that. But again, it sounds not simple, especially in the case that we talked about before, just to rely on the cell phone or the car keys. That doesn't seem like necessarily a good proof that the person is dead, even if it's his own phone, even his own car keys.
They left the information with the actual buyer. They gave him the location.
Right, right. But I said, it doesn't seem like they were able to get that, and before they know, it was buried in concrete. So hold on. Just to summarize, this is obviously a very interesting case, you know, an unfortunate case. But I think what you see from here is a big appreciation of what Rabbanim have to deal with in these unfortunate scenarios. Every ounce of evidence is so critical. You know, Lahavdol, you know, Zaka goes and, you know, the terrorist attack, they're very careful with everything to make sure to bury everything. But really, you know, in Halacha, to whatever you think that the forensics unit is into, you know, keeping the scene of the crime, Halacha calls for the same, if not stronger, you know, important details. Every detail counts. You see how Moshe goes through a tshuva. Every possible simon could be weighed. Does that work? Does that not work? You go back to the Mesech Levitumo, the Gentiles' quote-unquote testimony. How careful you have to be to get it. If you get that testimony the wrong way, it's not admissible in court. We wouldn't accept it. And that's why you really need experts handling such fields. Going back to the Bain thing. You know, we on the one hand, it's a very, very, very big isser of Eishes Ish, but at the same time, the rabbis always look through the ages to do whatever is in their power to find the heter. Lo aleinu, we should never need to practically know these halachas, but it's an important aspect of the Torah to learn about. Have a wonderful week.